Welcome to another episode of You Conversations, where we have science-based, health-focused conversations with University of Connecticut Doctor of Physical Therapy students. I'm Mary Beth Osborne, and I am a physical therapist and professor in the Doctor of PT program. And today we're going to discuss the effects of microdosing psilocybin on chronic pain. And so I just want to ask you guys, tell me about yourselves and what interested you in this topic.
I can start. Hi, I'm Lauren. As Dr. Osborne said, I am a physical therapy student from the University of Connecticut. The reason that I became interested in this topic is because in our classes, we learn a lot about chronic pain and all the different ways it can be treated. And one takeaway that I've gotten from these classes is that there's not like a one-size-fits-all approach to treating chronic pain. So for some people, a method could be helpful for treating pain, but for others, it might actually exacerbate the pain or provoke even more pain. So it's important to look at all the different types of methods of pain modulation, because if one method doesn't work, maybe another will. So we came across the effect of psilocybin on chronic pain, and it was an interesting topic to look at since it was something that I've never really seen or heard about before. And it seemed like something that was almost looked down upon in our society because psilocybin is a psychedelic. So it's interesting to especially look at the benefits of psilocybin because it seemed like everything that I believed before about psilocybin and psychedelics seemed to be like wrong or misunderstood. So overall, it was an interesting topic to look into, especially as a physical therapy student who would be working with many patients with chronic pain in the future.
Yeah, that makes sense because it is. Chronic pain is not what we thought it was. Like you cut your finger and it hurts. It's a lot mm-hmm. more complicated than that. And I think we're learning more every day about different influences on chronic pain. And the more tools we have, the better.
Yeah.
How about you guys introduce yourselves?
Yeah, let me introduce myself. So I'm Nick. I'm a classmate with Lauren. I'm also a doctor of physical therapy student here at University of Connecticut. And so I'm going to just be discussing what pain is exactly, because it sounds like it would be a very simple thing. Everyone kind of has their own experience of it. But I think when we're talking about chronic pain as a topic, we really need to kind of explain what it is. Like what exactly are we talking about?
I'm Nicole. I am also a doctor of physical therapy student with Lauren and Nick. And I was interested in this topic because I've had my own experiences with chronic pain, and I have tried various things to help myself, and I also have depression, and I've heard of psilocybin treatment as something for depression, and I know that depression and chronic pain can go hand in hand a lot of the time, so it was something that I wanted to look into as a solution for chronic pain as well.
Before we dive in, I really would like y'all to define or tell us specifically what psilocybin is.
Yeah, so psilocybin is a naturally occurring psychedelic compound, and it's found in specific types of mushrooms. Psychedelics are any substance that can alter the senses, emotions, thoughts, and perceptions of the consumer, and psilocybin often causes visual or auditory hallucinations, meaning that the consumer may see or hear things that are not really there, or it may just change the way that they are seeing something, so kind of distorting the image. So a person might look at a blank wall and see an elephant, or the wall might look wavy, and these are commonly referred to as magic mushrooms or shrooms.
Okay, gotcha. So these aren't the ones you buy at Big Y. These are specific mushrooms that you have to seek out.
Yes.
And by ingesting them in certain amounts, then you can have these different effects. So if too much might be seeing an elephant, I would mm-hmm. imagine. But tell me about microdosing.
So what microdosing is, it's basically taking like a very small dose of the drug or like a fraction. And typically people do this to receive the benefits of the drug and also to like minimize adverse effects.
Gotcha. So it's sort of like the sweet spot or the Goldilocks spot of the dose. Okay, great.
Exactly.
Yeah. And we just quickly, we don't have like a formal definition when we're looking this up. Different people kind of have different definitions, but as Lauren was saying, this is really more about the effect of it. It's just taking a small dose and how that causes a difference in the effect.
Yeah, and as Nick said, like there's just like minimal research on how much to take and like the exact dosage of it. So it varies from person to person.
Okay, gotcha. But when we refer to microdosing, then that means finding that optimal amount that isn't, you know, causing scary things to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
And before we launch into telling me more about this topic or discussing more about this topic, are there legal things we need to keep in mind?
Yes. So the use of psilocybin is not legal federally, and it's also not legal in most states. In Connecticut, since we are here right now, it is a Class A felony to use psilocybin. And your first offense, I think, is like a $2,000 fine or something like that. And after that, it's up to 10 years in jail. Please keep in mind that you need to check out the legality of psilocybin use in your state. And also, we recommend speaking with a doctor or another licensed health professional before beginning this type of treatment, just to make sure that it's okay and healthy and safe for you.
Yes, perfect. Do we know places that it's legal, or is it just like other countries mainly that there's more legal use of psilocybin, like maybe the Netherlands or something like that? I just don't really know.
As far as other countries, I'm not entirely sure. I know places like Amsterdam, at least, the laws are definitely looser. I can't say it's totally legal there. Also, I think states like Colorado have begun to legalize it, or at least decriminalize it, which means you can't necessarily get in trouble for it, even if it's not recommended or it's not particularly allowed.
Gotcha. So what did you guys learn while researching this topic?
So first, we want to look into kind of an overview of like chronic pain and how it's processed, and also how psilocybin influences that pain process. We also looked into the benefits of taking psilocybin and also the risks of taking psilocybin.
Yeah, so before we get into the discussion of how psilocybin can be used to treat chronic pain, we'll talk more about pain. And Nick, do you want to tell us what exactly pain is?
Sure. So I think Warren mentioned earlier, this is something that we talked about a lot in some of our classes. And to be honest, it was very confusing for me at first, going through some of the different mechanisms. And it was very difficult to try to kind of break it down and explain it in a simplified way that it made sense. So I just want to start by saying that pain science has evolved tremendously in the recent years and decades, but even more recent than that. And I think we have such a better understanding of many different causes of it. So I just want to kind of start with a couple quotes from the International Association for the Study of Pain. And I want to compare the definition that they had from 1979 to the updated version in 2020. And so in 79, they had defined pain as an unpleasant sensory or emotional experience associated with tissue damage. And so pain was only defined in the context of tissue damage. In the 2020 version, it sounds a little bit similar, but there's some very key important words that change the meaning of it and make it a much more broad kind of subjective experience. So their updated definition is an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with or resembling that associated with actual or potential tissue damage. So I just want to highlight a little bit there. So in that original definition, pain was only described within the context of tissue damage. And now they've made it much broader, like I said, to be a much more subjective experience. It doesn't even need to have that component of tissue damage. It just kind of uses that as a comparison of what we may be experiencing.
So that kind of sets the stage for like how we address it. If it's not necessarily tied to findings on x-ray or MRI or even palpation or anything, that it can be just the way the person perceives their body. And I think the general population is slowly coming around to that, but I think there's a lot of continued belief that the 1979 version is still in effect.
I think a lot of people still kind of do have that, and a lot of people don't even necessarily have a definition of it. It's more of like an intuition and like knowing what you're experiencing, but not necessarily being able to really explain it or to understand what someone else's experience of pain is. So like you said, yeah, so our having a much more nuanced framework for understanding pain allows us to kind of target different causes and ways we can address those causes of pain and hopefully treat those causes of pain. So just going to go into, so I'm not going to talk about all of them, but this is the same International Association for the Study of Pain. So they broke it down, pain down into five categories. And so I'm just going to quickly discuss three of them. And I'm going to use the terms that they use for them, but the terminology is not important. I'm just trying to kind of convey the different, some of the different mechanisms or different causes essentially of pain. So first is nociceptive pain. And again, don't worry about the names here. And this is how we kind of typically would think of pain. And this is pain from tissue damage. So that is kind of that initial original definition from several decades ago. And this would include like a kind of a classic example of if you touch a hot stove and you're going to feel that burning, and it's going to, that's when your nerves are stimulated in your hand, and that's going to essentially have a cause a reflex for you to withdraw your hand. So that's kind of just, you know, very easy to understand definition of what pain is. But there's also another form of pain that we learned about recently called nociplastic pain. And this doesn't have to do with anything physical so much as it changes the way your brain is processing pain. So this, having this nociplastic pain, the changes in how your brain processes pain can cause pain sensitization, which means that you have an increased experience of nociceptive pain. So for example, that same hot stove you touched is going to hurt even more now after this change. And it could also be pain felt in the absence of tissue damage. So there could be no known cause even. So this is something that we want to avoid, and this is something that potentially we're looking to target. And then finally, the last one I'm going to talk about is psychosocial pain. And this has more to do with emotions that we're feeling, negative emotions. So this can come in the form of anxiety or PTSD or depression. And these things are all going to eventually cause pain sensitization. So you just are living with more pain, essentially.
So similar to the second one, it's like that lowered threshold.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
So how does chronic pain fit into that?
Right. So chronic pain is defined as pain that has lasted for 12 weeks or more. And again, like this, we're really just talking about persistent pain. So once you have this persistent pain, you've experienced it for a long period of time, it can cause these kind of changes that it can affect multiple types of pain, including like the nociceptive and nociplastic pain. And included in this would be conditions such as fibromyalgia or chronic low back pain, where this just becomes this persistent problem. And you kind of just, regardless of, you know, you don't have that kind of injury causing this pain, but it's just this persistent pain, and it's just kind of persists there, and very little bit of provoking factors are going to make this pain a lot worse.
So it sounds like the chronic pain is more about how long it's been lasting, not as opposed to what it is,
correct,
but maybe longer than you would expect your hand to hurt after you touch a hot stove. Like you touch a hot stove, burn yourself, it hurts until the skin heals up. But this is like the skin's healed up and you're still feeling.
Exactly. Yeah. Or another example would be something like phantom limb pain, where there is no tissue that can be affected anymore, but people still could feel the effects of that as if the tissue was there and damaged.
Yeah, good example.
Exactly. So when we have pain chronically, this is going to most likely lead to psychological distress. If you're feeling pain constantly, it's going to have some kind of effect on you, which could be depression. And then this could lead to kind of this vicious cycle where pain's causing more pain, because things like depression will cause more pain sensitization. So you have these multiple causes of pain that are just increasing the overall sensation of pain.
Thanks, Nick. for describing pain. So now that we have an understanding of that, let's explore some theories as to how psilocybin acts on the body and how it can affect that perception of pain. So one of the primary theories of how psilocybin affects the body is that it binds to and activates something called 5-HT2A serotonin receptors, which is a really fancy word, but you can think of these receptors as locks and psilocybin as a key. So these receptors or locks control processes that reduce pain and inflammation, and when psilocybin enters the body, it acts as a key that fits into these receptors and unlocks these processes.
Okay, that's very interesting. And how does this lock and key process, how does that affect someone's pain?
Well, by unlocking these processes, pathways are activated that block chemicals that promote inflammation, which helps reduce inflammation overall. And this is important in pain processing because inflammation can change the behavior of nerves and cause increased pain. This is especially important in chronic pain because many chronic pain conditions have an inflammatory basis.
Okay, so we've kind of established pain is a very complicated and involved process. Does this kind of unlocking mechanism, does it do anything else to affect how someone feels pain?
Yeah, so actually by unlocking these processes, psilocybin actually increases the release of chemicals such as serotonin, oxytocin, and ACTH, which all are chemicals that help block pain signals. Plus, these receptors or locks also play a role in how a person thinks and remembers things. When this is combined with the increase of the chemicals I just mentioned, psilocybin can lead to changes in mood, overall perception, and thinking. And these changes are generally positive, which can offset the negative effects that chronic pain can have in each of those areas, which Lauren will discuss in more detail next.
Yeah, so I mainly looked into the benefits of taking psilocybin on chronic pain and also mental health issues such as depression. So one study I found, it was by Bornman and colleagues, and this was in 2021, so it was fairly recent. The study tested the effect of psychedelics, including psilocybin, on individuals who have chronic pain. So basically what happened in this study was that the average overall pain score is actually decreased after taking psilocybin. So just so you understand the impact, the pain levels before they took it were about 7 out of 10. And then the pain levels right after were about a 0.33 out of 10, so a third of a point out of 10. And then pain levels even 2 days after were about 3 out of 10. So it goes to show that there were lasting effects even days after to some degree, and definitely a little longer lasting than like your average Advil or Tylenol.
For sure.
Yeah.
Was there an average like timeline that the effects lasted overall?
So overall, the effects lasted about 2 to 5 days. So at like the 5 day point, that's when the effects kind of wore off in terms of.
Okay, yeah. And can you give an example of any specific chronic pain condition that was studied?
Yes. So in that specific study, there were the conditions that were studied were traumatic injury, connective tissue conditions, and chronic back pain. There's also another study I looked into by Schindler and colleagues, and this was in 2020. So again, fairly recent, and this one studied the effects of a single dose of psilocybin on individuals who experience migraines. So what they found in this study was that the average number of days that these participants had migraines decreased in the treatment group compared to the placebo group. So let me explain these groups a little bit more. So when I say the treatment group, I'm referring to the participants who received the psilocybin. And when I say placebo group, it's the group that did not receive the psilocybin. So overall, the average number of days that these participants had migraines decreased in the treatment group compared to the one that did not receive psilocybin. Yeah, and then, so let me talk a little bit about like the mental health effect. So going back to the study I talked about beforehand with Bornman and colleagues in 2021, many of the individuals in this study also reported that this experience improved positive reframing. So what I mean by positive reframing is that they looked at their pain as in more of an optimistic, positive way rather than something that's negative. So they went from like pain catastrophizing, depression, hopelessness about their pain to empowerment and actual like acceptance of their pain. Which is great since Nick talked about how much of an effect depression and negative thoughts can have on actually like worsening the pain that they feel.
Yeah.
It also led many of the participants in the study to desire to treat their bodies better in the future, and they actually seeked out other ways of improving their pain and overall well-being. So things like meditation, even like going to physical therapy, which directly applies to us.
What a great idea.
Yeah. And also breath work and just overall movement in addition to having their experience with psychedelics. So even though they didn't get like such lasting effects on pain from taking the psychedelics, they at least seeked out other methods of treating their pain, which could have potentially lasting effects on decreasing their pain over time.
Yeah, sort of like an part of a, like a, I'm going to say a team approach, but like a number of interventions that are used in concert to address the chronic pain or the migraine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Lauren, so one thing that I think we've mentioned several times earlier was how chronic pain and mental health challenges often go hand in hand. So did you find anything in your research about the effects of psilocybin on conditions like depression and anxiety?
Yeah, so I did find a study specifically on the effect of psilocybin on individuals with depression, and this was by Cahart, Harris, and colleagues, and it was conducted in 2018. So what they found in this study was that compared to baseline values of depression symptoms, these depression symptoms were significantly reduced. So just to give you some numbers, of all the 19 participants in this study, all of them showed some reduction in depression severity 1 week after taking psilocybin. And for most of these individuals, this effect was actually sustained for 3 to 5 weeks. So this goes to show that psilocybin may actually have lasting effects on depression, which is useful for individuals with chronic pain, as we talked about.
Yeah, that's fascinating. It's interesting to see how all these things kind of intersect. And so when I was researching the topic, I came across some really interesting interesting testimonials of people who have had some of these transformative experiences with psychedelic assisted therapy. So I just want to play a little clip here.
This is your first medicated treatment session.
Correct. This is the beginning of some interesting revelations on this video.
And are you feeling completely conscious and you're in control and...
Yeah, and I felt like I was able to relax even when I was talking through probably my most traumatic memories.
I don't think I had seen a dead person until then. The first one was gruesome too.
It was like being able to take a big breath, you know, after being stuck underwater for a long time.
That's a really inspiring video, Nick. I can totally relate to the sentiment of taking a deep breath after feeling like you're underwater. I know that I have had that same experience with my depression. It just sometimes like you feel so heavy. And I think that's sometimes where the pain can come into because you're so heavy and it's so hard to move around. So it does kind of feel like you're drowning in a sense. So it's really cool to see that there are ways that like you can kind of come above the water. Are there any other benefits either of you guys found on the use of psilocybin?
So one big thing that we kind of touched upon was that psilocybin is generally safer than opioids because psilocybin has low toxicity even with high doses. Also a big thing that, especially in this country, is that psilocybin doesn't cause physical dependence like we know opioids do. So the risk of addiction is very low. And in some cases, it actually has been used to treat addiction, but there's not a lot of research backing that up just yet.
Interesting.
Well, now that we have talked about some of the benefits, I kind of looked into the risks, and I think it's really important to discuss those. So I'll get into that. So one of the main risks associated with psilocybin use is an unwanted psychedelic effect. So what that means, what a psychedelic effect is, it's any emotions, feelings, or senses experienced by a person after taking a psychedelic drug like psilocybin. And I actually have a video of someone describing their psychedelic experience after taking psilocybin that I think provides a good example of this.
With this video, it's from a documentary called Have a Good Trip, Adventures in Psychedelics. It was on Netflix and it was made in 2020. And it's basically, basically the documentary is a bunch of celebrities talking about their experience with psychedelics. So like ASAP Rocky, Sting, Ben Stiller are some of the ones that talked about their experience. So the clip that I'm going to play is this girl, Sarah Silverman, I believe she's a comedian. She talks about being in a car with someone who took psychedelics while she herself was on psychedelics. So I'll play that.
So we get in his car and he pulls out and we get to the red light and the red light turns green and then yellow and then red and then green and then yellow and then red and then green and yellow and red. He has forgotten how to drive. For the life of him, he doesn't know how he even pulled out. It was just muscle memory. And then he doesn't know what he's doing, how cars work. How does a car work? We know how cars work.
Yeah, so that video just showed kind of the altered mental state that can come with taking psychedelics like psilocybin.
Yeah, so I think that the documentary would be good to watch if people are interested in learning more. And I love Sarah Silverman. She's famous, and I read her book, so
yeah.
She's got some street credibility.
I highly recommend that documentary. It's really fun. There's some cartoons and overall a lot of fun, a lot of colors and stuff.
It's also kind of a good reminder that you should not be driving under a substance such as psilocybin.
Yes, very serious. Very serious.
So one of the things, one of the parts of a psychedelic effect is the altered mental state, like you mentioned. And other aspects of that could be visual hallucinations or auditory hallucinations, which is something I discussed before, like seeing or hearing something that isn't really there. A person might also experience feelings of extreme happiness or peacefulness, alterations in their vision, and just general confusion, things like that. However, this is something that can be addressed through the dosage or how much psilocybin someone takes, as there is a specific amount that often leads to a psychedelic effect. However, this is something that like will probably differ from person to person, so it's important to be advised by a health professional when determining what amount to take, especially if you're trying to microdose, because the point of that is to kind of avoid that psychedelic effect and just extract the other benefits. So along with the risk of a psychedelic effect, there is a risk for a prolonged psychedelic effect or psychosis and recurrent hallucinations. And psychosis is a state in which someone is not connected to or lacks connection to reality. So a person in this state may have hallucinations, so see or hear things that are not there, or they might have something called delusions, which is kind of like believing things that aren't actually true. And then there is also just the potential for uncomfortable effects, including nervousness, paranoia, dizziness, blurred vision, and a moderate increase in heart rate or blood pressure. Continually, there's little research into psilocybin use for chronic pain, so there's no knowledge of the long-term effects of taking psilocybin. Some studies show that the pain relief from psilocybin use may only last 2 to 5 days, like we discussed before, and it's most often highest during use, potentially due to the altered mental state. But these risks are fairly uncommon and most often occur in people with pre-existing mental health conditions or a family history of mental illness. And then of course, the last and probably most important risk is the legal risk that may be assumed when using psilocybin, because like I've said a couple times now, psilocybin use is not federally legal and it may not be legal in everybody's state. So to properly address this risk, we really implore you to research the legality of psilocybin use in your state to ensure that you are abiding by the law and to consult with a healthcare professional before beginning any type of treatment with psilocybin.
Great to keep in mind, yeah. So as we move forward and we wrap up, what do people need to remember? What are the main points that people should take? They should watch the documentary.
Yep, definitely.
Overall, since there's little evidence on the use of psilocybin for chronic pain and there are legal concerns, we can't recommend that any of our listeners incorporate this into their daily lives, but we do recommend and encourage that more research on this practice should be conducted. So we hope that listeners will take this information, conduct further research into the legality of psilocybin in their state, and encourage policymakers to support the research of psilocybin use as a treatment for chronic pain.
And if you're curious to see if psilocybin is legal in your state, you can check this website, www.psychedelicalpha.com, and that'll give you information on the psychedelic laws in your state.
Good to know. Yeah, I think you can't overemphasize the legal implications of this, but as we've seen with changes with marijuana legality, things change as time goes on, so it starts with curiosity and science.
All right, well, that's going to do it for today's podcast of You Conversations. Thank you all for listening.